Hi, I'm Mel Majoros. I am a 2-year cancer survivor. My blog, The Cancer Warrior, is one of the top 10 breast cancer blogs, according to blogs.com. I'm here to bring a fresh, upbeat perspective to a topic that to some may seem scary. A positive mental attitude got me through my cancer, and I hope to share that with you.
Imagine not only that you're diagnosed with a cancer that mostly young children get, but you're in treatment for 2 straight years, and you still maintain a positive mental attitude. What do? Of course, you give back. Today's guest, he has his own radio show, he has a book out, and he's a life coach. I'd like you to meet Darren Neuberger. How are you today, Darren?
I'm fine. How are you, Mel?
Excellent, excellent. So tell me a little bit about yourself, like how you got diagnosed, and we'll go from there.
Okay. Well, this year will be year 5 post-treatment for me, so it's my 5-year cancerversary, so it's a pretty cool year. But I was diagnosed back on August 5th, 2003.
Wow.
At the age of 34, a simple cough I had for about 7 months was my only real symptom. But, yeah, you know how that works off the cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it was quite a shock. I was very, very active. An old jock, I call myself, baseball, hockey, all the sports you play up here in Canada. So did all that kind of stuff, and then quite a shock. Cancer doesn't run in my family, and then when they told me that I had cancer, I was like, there's no way I have cancer. But you know how that is, too. It's just one of those things that can blindside you and
yes.
change the focus of your life for sure.
Now, did they say, oh, you probably don't have to worry about it because you're young? Because I've heard that a lot from young adult survivors like yourself.
No.
No?
It was like you're going to need get a you'll get a phone call from... I live in Lethbridge, Alberta, so I had to go to Calgary for my treatment, which is about 2 hours north of us.
Oh, my goodness.
So I had to wait for a phone call, and they didn't really even know what type of cancer I had when I was diagnosed. Just know that I had cancer, and I had to wait to go to Calgary to get a final diagnosis. It was the August long weekend, 2003, or as I call it, the longest long weekend of my life.
I'm sure. Oh, my goodness. So you found out you had ALL, as we'll call it now, and you were in treatment for 2 straight years. What exactly did they do?
Well, I could give you a lot of bull crap about that. Well, first of all, when they told me I was diagnosed, I had to stay in the hospital. So I was in the hospital it was a 5-month in patient kind of protocol. So I was there for about 30 to 32 days of, high dose chemo. Sent me back home to Lethbridge for about, 7 days to have no chemo, just to see if I get remission, right?
Mm-hmm.
I do that for 5 months. So I was there and back, and it was a long battle. So essentially, when it was all finished, I had over 600 chemo treatments.
Oh, my goodness.
I had 2 weeks brain radiation. I had a trip to intensive care, and I had over 34 blood and platelet transfusions into me.
Is that all?
No. That was it.
So when it's the lymph system, is that correct?
It's blood, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow. So is there a stage for that cancer, or is it just...
No stage, just acute means get this guy treated right away, so...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, with the options, usually with, acute leukemias and even some lymphomas like Hodgkin's or non-Hodgkin's, the protocol has changed a little bit. They really want to go with the stem cell or the bone marrow transplant route, because that way you can get it, get rid of it, and hopefully you have no, side effects with that, and you're essentially going to call you cured from cancer if you have the transplant, but... If it doesn't work, then it's like, what else do you do?
Exactly. Now, how did you stay busy after 5 months in the hospital and 7 days on and off?
My personality is such that I like to be involved with people.
Yes.
So, in the hospital, Monday to Friday, and you have to realize that I'm from a different province. Like my wife and I are both in Saskatchewan, and our families are all there. So it was pretty much her and I going through this, and she was working in Lethbridge. Monday to Friday to keep us afloat, have a house roof over our head and that kind of stuff. And
right.
So she came up on the weekends to visit me. So when she came, they would usually give me a weekend pass to go kind of tour around Calgary or what have you. But I would just go around and talk to other patients, and I'd, try to play pranks on the nurses. I'd try to weigh you all and that kind of stuff. Just things to let everybody know that I'm okay, and I think to let myself know that I'm going to get through this. So.
Exactly. That's awesome. And did any of the other patients or nurses play pranks on you?
No. Not really. I can't remember any of the patients or nurses. I had a great personal care attendant who would hook me up with free cable and all, because it's expensive being an inpatient in the hospital. You have to get cable every day and pay for phone. The monthly fees are are pretty expensive. And for me, I didn't have any benefits because I switched careers.
Oh.
That wasn't long enough to collect any benefits, so I was just collecting the bare minimum. And my wife just finished college that time, so she was making, you know, entry-level salary in her career, so it was a tough haul.
I believe it. Now, how did that... Are you still paying off those medical bills, or...?
Well, the beauty of living in Canada is that we don't have any medical bills.
Oh.
With our health care, it's all covered.
Sweet.
So, yeah. Like, it's a good thing, because I know being in treatment for 2 years, we'd be bankrupt, so...
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. I still can't believe it, 2 years. I mean, there's so many different cancers that I don't know about. Just, you know, you look at other people, like, I think I went through a lot, and then knowing that you were in the hospital for, like, you know, 5 weeks and then 1 week. I mean, 5 months rather than 1 week. That is just amazing. And you're still here to talk to us and have such a positive attitude.
Yeah, it's funny. I was just, I was a guest speaker for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. They had a donor and a volunteer appreciation night, and they had me come as a guest speaker. Just back in May it was. And I got to sit with a couple of the hematologists that I had for my doctors back when I was in the hospital. And I said, you know, after 7 years now, has that protocol changed? And they said, no. I'm like, really? You'd think that. I would hate, I know it was a long haul for me. Like, it was sometimes difficult just trying to keep sane. Because
exactly.
When you're no longer an inpatient, but you're, like, I couldn't work, so I had so much chemo, and I was, you know, high-dose chemo that, honestly, I just wanted to live. So I needed to focus myself on getting better and having no immune system is impossible to work. No energy.
Exactly. Oh, I know what that, fatigue for me was just horrible. And I went from working 60 hours a week, two jobs, to 20 hours a week. And that was pushing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my whole focus and my thought was that you think that, you know, I went through this. I hope that no one else has to go through that much treatment. But,
exactly.
You know, it'll get there one day.
It will. So you got out of the hospital. So what happened then after 2 years? You're now 36.
No, now I'm 41.
Well, I mean, 2 years after...
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Yeah. Now it's 2 years later, you're 36.
Yeah,
and,
well, it's... My wife gave me the... thank God she let me recuperate about 7 or 8 months post-treatment just to kind of get my feet back on the ground. And then it's looking for work again, of course. And everybody that's young adult has been through cancer, you have that whole... in your mind that you've done something so epic that you're never going to probably do again. And hopefully you don't have to worry about doing that again. That
right.
Your whole goals and mind shift changes. And like, what do you want to do for the rest of your life? And I've been in sales my whole life. And prior to being diagnosed, I went to work in the oil patch. And that was just, it was good money, but I'll never be able to go back to that kind of work again. So I, you know, looked for a job, and I took a couple of part-time jobs and took a sales job with selling advertising for a local newspaper. Then I had an opportunity to be the revenue development coordinator for the Canadian Cancer Society.
Oh, wow.
At that time, I thought, well, wow, this is awesome. I can give back and raise some funds for cancer. And it was great. I did that for just about 2 years, and I was the office lead, if you will, on, I think, 3 or 4 Relay for Lives. I did all the third-party fundraising, like the head shades. And
excellent.
People do that kind of stuff. But the events that I actually got to have in my portfolio raised over $1 million in the first year I was working there.
Wow, that's amazing.
Oh, yeah, it was awesome. I had great people. I had great committees that are doing the Relay for Life, and I had amazing people that wanted to, you know, come to the plate and do their own third-party events, but always part of the package. I think, well, you come and share your story for us. I'm like, of course I'll do that, right? And I'll share my story if you're going to throw in the cash. That's fun. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
I'm cancer, I'm all over that. So it was fun. It was rewarding, and I felt so, you get up every morning, go to work and raise money for cancer. For me, it was like, wow, that's awesome.
Exactly.
And then I took a job with a high school baseball academy, because baseball is my other passion, too. I grew up as a baseball player. I, you know, played at the highest level I could in my province, because I, for as far as scholarships go, I threw up my arm when I was in grade 12, so no one's going to take a wounded duck. That's, you know, that is important. But I ended up coaching, too, and I coached at a pretty high caliber, and been fortunate to be on some good teams. Won provincial championship 4 times, a Western Canadian championship once, and a 4th place and a national championship. So I've been on some pretty cool teams. And then to be able to give back to baseball, I thought, well, this is awesome. You know, and just the crappiest economy in the world in 2009.
Yes.
And difficult bringing in funds for a high school baseball academy. So I was laid off there in March, and now it's, you know, I took my life coach certificate, and I'm a certified empowerment coach, so I want to empower people to, you know, get their goals and be where they want to be, and with a strong focus on cancer survivorship, too.
So how did that work? You went from, obviously, you said you got let go because of the economy, and which a lot of people do. So why did you decide on life coaching? Like, I know you could do anything that you want, and I know you want to give back. But what made that more important than anything else?
It was one of those things that I've always wanted to do. Like, the past 4 or so years, I thought about that. You read about it, you hear about it, and this guy's a coach and that kind of stuff. And, I mean, I was a coach. I was a baseball coach, and I know what it's like to... I mean, I coached kids that were the ages of 17 to 21, and then my last year of coaching, they were, like, you know, college kids playing a pretty elite college wood bat league up here. And I thought, well, if I can, you know, have these kids on board with what I'm talking about and empower them to go out there and play every day.
Exactly.
I mean, that's the harder than doing to anybody else, right? Because, you know, young guys know everything.
Oh,
but if
yeah.
I can instill a couple of, you know, nuggets of my knowledge and the things that I've learned along the way, and they bought into the program, thought, this would be a pretty nice little gig.
And do you have a lot of, I guess, clients so far?
I just started out. It's
oh, excellent.
Not even like 3 weeks into it, maybe a month into it. But the thing for me is that over the past 5 years, I received emails and phone calls and all kinds of requests from young adult cancer survivors. And the biggest thing that they have for the most of them is that it's the post-cancer life is the hardest transition
yes.
for most people to get back into, because you go through all of this, you know, uncertainty of a cancer diagnosis. You're 20, you're 21, you were in school, or you're 25, you're married, or you know what I mean? Just the whole transition part, for that one, maybe it's 6 months or 9 months or a year, or maybe it's 3 weeks, you're a cancer patient. And that's all you know, is you're a cancer patient, you know, doctor appointments, you know,
yes.
Treatments, all that kind of good stuff. And all of a sudden, you're finished.
That good stuff.
You're finished, and it's like, now what?
Exactly. Oh, and I felt that way, too, when I was, 38, 39. You know, that was the hardest part for me. It was just getting back to work, because you don't feel like you. You don't, you know, sometimes you don't look like you, because my hair grew in gray. And everyone's like, wow, you look great. And I'm thinking, well, who are you talking? You know, you kind of look behind you like, is there someone else here? Because, you know, I feel all weirded out, and, you know, I should feel... I mean, I was grateful that I was back and everything, but it was just like, okay, this is weird. This isn't, you know, it's the new normal is totally bizarre to me.
Two of the biggest hurdles that you probably went through or that you do go through is that the people around you who've never, you know, been through cancer don't understand what it's like to be a cancer patient. When they hear the words, you're finished your treatment, they're like, yeah, you're back.
Yeah, you're done.
You're done. So it's back to being Mel again. You're the same person, but you're not the same person because, I mean, like, you know, who knows what you have gone through in the insides with chemo
right.
and all that kind of side effects you can have with that, or if you lost a limb or you lost a body part, you're not really the same person. But they mm-hmm. don't understand that. They just think you're finished and it's time to go. And people struggle with that. They struggle really badly with that because they want to be that person they were, but inside they know they can't be.
Right.
And I think that's, if you look at stats, there's a lot of depression, a lot of suicide
mm-hmm.
with cancer.
I struggle with depression, and I'm a big proponent of medication if you take it with your doctor's approval.
Right.
Or therapy or anything, you know, as long as you talk to your doctor and say, hey, you know, I mean, for the longest time I thought I could handle it, and then finally I went to my doctor and I was just like, I can't, you know, be sad all the time. Or just like, cry at the drop of a hat for no reason whatsoever. And I'm sure a lot of young adult survivors are the same way. And for me, medication helped. For someone else, it could be meditation or yoga or, you know, any number of things. But
yeah.
I know exactly where you're coming from.
And that's just the tip of the iceberg for a lot of people, too. Right? It's
oh, yes.
Like, okay, so I'm finished now. And you're excited to be finished, but you're scared to be finished because you've lost that. It's funny how cancer can become your safe place.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden that's taken away, and you're like, oh, man, okay, now I have to figure out what I'm going to do again. So you might go back to school or you, whatever you're doing. And what about starting a family? What if you can't? What if you have the lost ability to have children because of treatment? I mean, how do you get over that? There's a lot of people that are married that end up being divorced because
right.
they're too, right? So I found there's a big void there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, talking to a lot of other people that have gone through you know, cancer as a younger adult, or even, you know, like, say, 45 plus, 50, sometimes they don't want to talk to the social worker or psychosocial guy because they just want to get the hell out of the hospital,
yes.
out of that whole profession. And they want to talk to somebody that's been through it that can give them, you know, their perspective and sound advice of what they've been through, because we've all been through essentially the same thing. It doesn't matter what type of cancer.
Exactly.
The
exactly.
emotional side of it is very, very similar to most patients or most cancer survivors. So I just figure, what the hell? I'm doing it anyways. And so I thought, you know, it's. I did some research and stuff online, and I think I found two other people throughout North America that are doing it.
So you can do it via the phone or Skype or something
Skype,
like that?
Telephone, face-to-face if they're in this area.
Right.
But most coaches do it by the telephone.
Oh, okay.
That's your business coach. You can do it, you know, face-to-face with
Right. With Where were you 2 years ago? Darren.
I'm here now. 2 years ago?
Well, I know I had this, like I said, I had the same problem as you did, and I talked to therapists, and sometimes I just felt like, well, their ideas of helping me were just like, really, that's all you have in your bag of tricks? And I didn't really know Facebook that much, and it was only until I started blogging and seeing, talking to people on Facebook where I realized, oh, well, it's not just me. And I know that you know that some survivors think that, okay, well, when I feel all sad and everything and my caregiver, my boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, whatever, doesn't know how to react to me, I'm the only person who feels that way, and you're not.
That's right.
You know, and that's an important thing that we as, you know, you have a radio show and I have a radio show that we need to get out there. It's like, okay, well, if you feel like you're so alone, you're not, because there's always someone like yourself or myself. I mean, you can always just get online and be like, hey, I feel like this. This sucks. What can I do? And if we can't help, there's lots of organizations that we can point you to.
Exactly. And the thing about, like, I will never downplay the knowledge, the professionalism of a social worker or a psychosocial person. They're there for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
They're trained, you know, they're counselors. They know, you know, their profession very well.
Oh, exactly.
But what I have found throughout my travels is that they really do not know how to speak to young adults, because we're foreign. We're new to them, if you will.
Yes.
We're kind of the new kid in the block. It's like, okay, these issues are like almost beyond me, and I don't really know what to say, because they've been trained to teach and, you know, and counsel the older people and kids and their families. That's where they're strong. When it comes to you or I that's been diagnosed, then we have different needs. It's like, you know, I don't know if we can have kids, or I lost the ability to have kids, or, man, I'm going to lose my breast. I'm 21, and I don't know what to do. They don't know what to say.
Right, exactly. And, you know, like I'm saying, therapy is good for some people. And if your social worker at the hospital isn't working for you, then find something that does. Don't feel like you're ever alone, because you're not.
No. There's all kinds of avenues out there, but you have to look for it a little bit, which is unfortunate. But, you know, that's when I get up and running here, you know, to a point where I'm going to be, you know, full-time the next couple of years doing this, hopefully, that I will be linked to cancer hospitals and that kind of
right.
stuff. So if somebody can say, this guy, you know, can help you out. So,
well, I like to say to people, you know, people ask on Facebook, it's like, what would you say to a cancer survivor? I would say that there's always hope, you're never alone, and there's tons of people here on the internet who are here to help you, and all you have to do is ask. And asking, I think, is the hardest part.
It is.
Saying that, like, when I went to the doctor and I asked for medication, that was really hard for me, because I was basically saying, I'm not strong enough to deal with this. And it took me a long time to realize that.
You know, the thing is that a lot of people still, even though cancer, I just go out and say that cancer seriously is an epidemic right now. It's so much of it right now.
Mm-hmm.
And blame it on aging population, blame it on that we have done great strides in research and people are living longer with disease. We're getting past the 5-year mark, and that's all good. But the fact is that, you know, different stats, 1 out of 2, 2 out of 5, whatever it is, it's still a big portion of the population that's being diagnosed.
Exactly.
And it's not going away. So we need to have more resources than just your general in-house hospital resources. And that's why I decided to do this. You know, and I'm passionate. I want to help my fellow survivor and make sure that the transition
exactly.
isn't as rocky as it has been in the past. So.
So, and that's also, you have an internet radio show on Block Talk Radio.
Yeah, it's called Let's Talk About It.
Mm-hmm.
I interview young adults. I interviewed you about, I don't know, 6 months ago, I guess it was.
Yes.
Give you an opportunity to share your story. Essentially, I asked just really basic questions. Who you are, where you're from, what this cancer thing do to you, how old you when you're diagnosed, you know, just easy things, and just gives people an opportunity to share their story. that it's been so well received that people email me all the time saying how much they love the show, and they, you know, they get so much from just listening to other stories, and it's cool. It's just another way of giving back, giving people opportunity to do that, and it's just a lot of fun, as you can attest.
Well, yes, and you can always learn something, like we said, from other survivors, even if it's not the same kind of cancer you have.
Right. I have a pretty cool two shows coming up next Wednesday, the 21st and the 28th. Next Wednesday, I have Carrie Small. She's a young adult cancer survivor who actually is playing with the Tampa Breeze in the Lingerie Football League.
Oh, really?
So she's taking, you know, this her diagnosis and turning it to something. And she's playing this Lingerie Football League. I mean, how cool is that?
That's awesome.
And then the next week I have a great organization that I think a lot of people should know about. Maybe they don't, but they will, though. It's called Longevity.
Oh.
They are out of Washington, D.C., and they just joined force with Chicago and others. We'll learn more about it on the 28th, but they're essentially, they want a voice for lung cancer.
Excellent,
I mean,
yes.
You never really hear any stories about lung cancer because people with lung cancer generally, like pancreatic, don't have a very good success rate.
Right.
So it'd be great to have them on there and have their executive director, I believe, and some patients, or some survivors, and people that are involved in the whole organization. It'll be a fantastic learning show. So I like doing that, too. I've had people from Vanderbilt on there talk about a couple of the young adult programs and stuff. So it's just a good, like you said, you learn a lot of good things on these shows.
Exactly. Wow, you sound like my show. We should collaborate. Now, you also, speaking of that, you have a book that's out right now.
I do.
As well. You're just multitasking.
Yeah. It's called Let's Talk About It, Inspiring Stories from Young Adult Cancer Survivors. It was published on January 2010. So I've collected 40 stories, including my own, from young adults that were diagnosed with cancer between the ages of 15 to 45. It was a two-year progress, so 2 years of getting the stories collected, and it was a long journey, but when it's finally finished, it was incredible. And the vision for this was, obviously when I was in the hospital, I read Lance Armstrong's book, It's Not About
right.
the Bike, and
mm-hmm.
I was so inspired by his story.
Yes.
And I got thinking, well, geez, you know, I'm kind of going through the same thing here. And I thought it'd be pretty cool if we had something, you know, like that, but just full of other young adult survivor stories that people that have been there and you know, been through all the treatments and all the side effects and the losing their hair and all that kind of stuff, and had it as a resource for a newly diagnosed patient. So when they are going through that uncertainty of their diagnosis, here's 40 other people that have been there and, you know, give them some inspiration and hope. It's been fantastic.
And did you self-publish that? Or
did, yes. I went through a company called Authority Publishing out of Sacramento, California.
Mm-hmm.
Stephanie Chandler is the owner, CEO, and all the good stuff there, and she did a great job. Great to work with. The book's out, and it's available now on Amazon. Amazon.com.ca, Barnes & Noble, all the online bookstores, as well as through my website.
How difficult was it to self-publish?
It was actually a snap. It wasn't difficult at all. When I found Stephanie and we started talking back and forth, I got her name through another friend that's had used her or heard of her. And a couple emails, a couple phone calls, and she just walked me through the whole process. In my wildest dreams, I'd never thought I'd ever, you know, a book, because that's
right.
not what I ever, you know, thought about doing. But when it came to that, so that I had the need to get this book out there, and went from being a thought to a good idea, and then there's a lady that was out in New Jersey that unfortunately is in the book, and she passed away before the book came out, but she was my driving force, because I was going to scrap the whole process. It was difficult finding stories, you know?
Right.
I became the social media king, I say, like Facebook and Twitter and
mm-hmm,
all that
mm-hmm.
stuff to get stories. And I said, like, it's impossible. I can't. And she said, you have to. I want my story in that book. And then, yeah, like I said, she unfortunately didn't make it for the book sale. But it's incredible. I mean, it was a lot of hard work. There's a little bit of a family tie to it. My wife did the design work on the book, the front and the cover, did a fantastic job. And a good friend of ours did the editing. So it's good to have people, you know, involved that we know and stuff. And so it's pretty cool.
And are you trying to get that book to different hospitals across the country?
I am, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's with the economy, I've been finding some roadblocks there with people. And it could be just an easy out, or it could be true. You never know, right?
Right.
Just some of their programs are cut. They don't have the funding for it and stuff. And I appreciate that, because it's been a tough year or two for a lot of both the Canada and the United States. But there's a few hospitals that have requested to have the book, and I think within the next, you know, get some more word of mouth out there and do some more you know, radio shows like yours and yes. local media and stuff, it won't take too long before it's out there. It'll be available, I think, for a lot of the big hospitals anyways.
I think it's important to have stories like yours and other survivors because, like I said, when I was going through it, I didn't know about Facebook. I went on, I believe, breastcancer.org, which is a great website, but it didn't have that personal interaction like Facebook or Twitter does. You know, and I'm sure your survivors in your book who are still with us would probably be willing to be contacted.
Oh, definitely.
If they, you know, if somebody needed their assistance or their, or if they had any questions.
And you know, and there's also, I mean, from reading the book, you mean?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, they're just they're open book,
so to speak.
Definitely. You know, they've all said that too. If anybody wants to, you know, talk to me about this, and I've actually had a couple people email me about a couple of stories saying, "Oh, I really want to talk to that person." So I emailed her. She's like, 100%. Like, they're just. So they've been talking back and forth, so it's pretty cool.
Right, because there are a lot of people, like when I was first diagnosed, it took me 6 months to talk about my cancer because it just freaked me out so much. But I could barely talk to my employers about it. You know, I got like the paperwork for the medical leave, and they're like, "You didn't fill out the paperwork." I'm like, "Dude, I just got diagnosed. You want me to fill this paperwork out? Are you kidding?" You know,
yeah.
There's, as you know, you were just like tunnel vision, like, "Holy crap, I have cancer. What now?"
Yeah. I mean, it blindsides you.
It does.
You're just, you have your path, and you're on this path, and all of a sudden this little thing called cancer comes around and knocks you off, and you're like, "Well, how the hell do I get back on that path?"
Exactly.
And eventually you do, but it just, in the initial, you know, months, that is just a big fog, and you don't really know what the heck you're doing, and I feel for the people that go through it alone. I mean,
yes.
It's, I mean, I've met a couple people in the hospital that had nobody, and it's like, oh, man. Well, without my wife or with me, it would have been difficult.
I agree. And I feel for the people who go through it alone. But like I said, there's always people on the internet. I mean, I know that may not be close to you, but there's a whole community of cancer survivors who are willing to, you know, give their opinion where we're not medical professionals. We can say, "Hey, we had this side effect. Maybe that's affecting you. Maybe you should talk to your doctor about this, that, and the other thing."
Yeah, and I agree with that. And still, though, you'd think that with all the, you know, the celebrities that have come forward with cancer, like Lance and mm-hmm. you know, Sheryl Crow and Christina Applegate and so on. Like, people have been diagnosed and that. And, you know, you think that it'd be more of a topic people want to talk about. Like, people still don't want to talk about their cancer diagnosis. And that's their own personal thing. They don't have to. But that's kind of
right.
What the path I'm on. I'm also an inspirational speaker. And part of my speaking tour is that I want to bring, you know, awareness, first
right.
of all, to young adults that, okay, you know, we're not bulletproof. And I always talk about things about listening to your body, because always talking to you, all kind of good stuff. Things that we just kind of shrug off as nothing.
Right.
Delay. That's why young adults, for the most part, I have a rule that I call the 50-50 rule. And what that is, essentially, we're 50% at fault, and so are the doctors, 50% at fault.
That's right.
I want everybody to work together to get rid of that rule and have it so the doctors will, first of all, pay attention to what you're saying, and not just treat the symptom, but treat the patient. That's the most important thing, is treat the patient.
Right.
Look in his or her eyes and see the anguish and the frustration and realize that, you know, you have to figure this out. This is driving this person insane. And for us, we have to be more proactive in our health.
Oh, yes.
That this is not right. Because before you know it, you're diagnosed with stage 4 or something, and there's no stage 5.
Right. And I agree. We're on the same page. Be proactive. If there's anything that you think is abnormal, see your doctor. And if you don't have a doctor, get one. And if you don't like your doctor, get a different one.
You can fire their ass.
That's exactly.
You're the CEO of your own life, and you make all the calls, all the plays, and that's the most important thing. If you let someone else do it for you, or you just keep going with it, you know, the norm, your fate could be in someone else's hands, and before you know it, it's not a good situation. So you have to be the CEO of your own life.
Exactly. That's, you know, are we the same person, Darren? Come on. Seriously. This is exactly what I'm saying. You have to be proactive. If you don't like your doctor, change. I actually told my doctor one time, because I had just met her when I was diagnosed, so she didn't know me from Adam. She didn't know, like, my crazy sense of humor. And she gave me that poor you look,
mm-hmm.
and I was just like, listen, I told all my friends I'm not going to take that look from them, and I'm sure as hell aren't going to take it from you. And she, you know, she didn't mean anything by it, but she was just, like, taken aback that I said that. And I'm like, I don't want people to look at me and feel sorry for me, because I don't want them to think, oh, there's cancer girl. I want them to say, there's Mel, and she's going, you know, maybe she's going through something, but I don't want them to think that I am the disease.
Yeah. And it's almost like a, you know, an oncologist or hematologist or what have you. They're almost, if they work in a specialized clinic, they're almost, it's almost like a fast food drive-thru.
Right.
Next, next, next. You know what I mean? It's just like, if you're fortunate enough to have a great doctor like we had in Calgary, who we, you know, have become friends with now, but just way more stories about people that don't have that doctor and have the ones that give you that look or just don't give you the time or have one foot in the door kind of thing. They don't,
right.
They're, just, they're too busy, but at the end of the day, yeah, you have to slow that person down. And like you said, if you don't feel you're getting the best results from that person, see ya.
Right.
Somebody else.
You know, if you have, well, I'm not comparing oncologist to cable, but if you don't like channels on your TV, then you change them.
That's right.
You know, if you don't like your doctor, fix it. If you don't like the store you're going to, you know, if you like, I don't know, one store over the other, you don't go to the one you don't like.
And that's true. And that's a good analogy because people think that, well, it's a no-brainer. If you don't like your cable, you're rid of it. If you don't like your phone supplier, you find somebody else. But they think, for whatever reason, that you're stuck with that person.
Oh, no.
When it comes to your own health. I mean, and that's too bad.
Exactly.
The biggest thing is, I guess, with cancer, that you just want, you're so freaked out that you, this person is the specialist, you know, he or she knows everything and that they're going to make you better. But if sometimes these people don't know.
Right.
But there are people that do know. So just like your cable or your telephone, get out of here.
And I actually looked up all my doctors online. Like, they're like, okay, well, this is going to be your surgeon. This will be your oncologist. So, I mean, knowledge is power. If you feel that, you know, maybe if you need a second opinion, if that's what's for you, then get a second opinion. You know, these doctors aren't going to say, oh, well, you know, this is the gospel. Because if you don't feel comfortable with whatever chemo treatment, if you get like a second opinion and they say the same thing, great. If they say something else, well, then it's your body. It's your choice.
Yeah. Use a baseball analogy. You know, I'm going to go down swinging.
Exactly.
I'm not going to go down in it without just, you know, thinking this guy's going to strike me out every time because he's a better pitcher than I am, and I'm a hitter. It's not going to happen.
Right.
I'm going to go until I can finally hit that guy out of the park, and then I'm going to find that person that's going to throw me that pitch I can hit all the time. And so you have to do that. I mean, it sounds corny, but it's just the way it is. And you're right. We have so much technology at our fingertips. You know, we can Google or search Wikipedia, anything we want as far as doctors. You can get the information you need from these cancer clinics and stuff. And why not? I find that the internet, you know, when I was diagnosed with ALL, that I didn't start research or anything because I thought it's so out there as far as, like, treatments and what they talk about the disease and blah, blah, blah. I just let that in the hands of my doctor because where I'm in Calgary, they have some of the best doctors and researchers in the world. So I knew I was in good hands there. And I think my wife said she searched a little bit and it just drove her crazy. I mean, they talked about stuff that's, you know, because my type of cancer is a kid's cancer.
Oh.
The best candidate's like a 4-year-old girl. 34-year-old guys were not quite the same person. But it just, it talks to that. And, I mean, I'm not that. So it can drive you insane. Sometimes, you know, I'm on the fence about whether to research that kind of stuff. But as far as doctors and stuff go,
right.
I'm all over that.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, you have to research your own doctor. Like, and even if a second opinion, like, I was kind of freaked out about, you know, my friends and relatives were saying, get a second opinion. And I was thinking, oh, my God, how am I going to pay for all this? And like you said, your health care covers everything in your country. But it's like, okay, well, what's more important, your money or your life?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I blogged about it before. I'd rather be broke than dead. I mean, I can look and see the 800 number or know that it's a collection agency and still go, well, I'm still here to answer the phone.
Yeah.
You know.
And that's unfortunate in the U.S. because, I mean, how many people choose to not have treatment because of the cost.
But they have to take you, though. That's the thing. That's the thing people don't realize. Yes, it's a huge financial burden, but there's not a hospital in this country that's going to say, you have cancer? Well, I'm sorry, you can't pay. Well, see you later.
Yeah.
You know.
That's just a different, it's a tough pill to swallow.
Right. Yes.
It really is.
So if people want to get a hold of you as a life coach, as a survivor, how would they do so?
They can do it through my email. My email contact is talkaboutabook, so talkaboutitbook@gmail.com. This is essentially my book. That's my whole thing, is let's talk about it.
Right.
So it's talkaboutabook@gmail.com, or they can call me at 403-380-3066. The book is, it's phenomenal. If you know of anybody that's going through cancer, or even a person that's having this bad day,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you read these stories, and I have people say, oh, the stories are sad, and they are. I mean, it's just reality of life that you shouldn't have to have your leg amputated when you're 18 years, like one of the girls in the book. Just graduated high school, and had her leg, you know, amputated at the lower knee because of cancer. But what a great way to start your adult life. But you know what? She's the funniest kid. The one Halloween, she'd dress up as a pirate, use the wood leg for her wood.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you'd never know. But like she said, it's one of those things that happened to me. I can't change it. And now I'm just going to take my new life like this and empower other people. Like she said, you know, I've talked about other people that she's empowered and you know, don't woe is me. And, you know, do you have both your limbs kind of thing, right?
Right.
And just taking this experience and she's taking the ball and run with it. And they're all like that in that book. So, I mean, it's a fantastic book.
Awesome. And why would you want to go through life, no matter what, in a crappy mood or just woe is me?
Some people do. I mean, it's society. That's, and you know, with my empowerment coaching, it's not 100% just cancer.
I mean,
I'll work with people, you know, athletes that go through slumps and that kind of stuff. I've been there. Even businesses that are having a tough time with their sales. I mean, sometimes people just need to be picked up, and that's exactly what I do. I guess I'm blessed with the gift of the gab. And I get along with people so well that people are at ease talking to me, and I'm at ease talking with people. I understand there's a lot of stuff that I've been through too in my personal life that I can relate to, and it's just, yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's a great, at the end of the day, for me, it's all about leaving behind a footprint. And
exactly.
When I'm gone, I want people to say, you know, maybe he didn't have millions of dollars or a big house, but he sure made a difference towards cancer. He made a difference towards our business, whatever. That's all I care about.
Exactly. Yeah, I agree. Well, Darren, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm going to wrap up like I usually do. This is The Cancer Warrior. You can follow me on Facebook, Mel Majoros. Find the fan page, The Cancer Warrior, on empowerradio.com. Check out my blog, thecancerwarrior.blogspot.com. And you know what? Life looks pretty good from where I'm sitting. Sending you good vibes. It's The Cancer Warrior on empowerradio.com.